We present the news quiz with your chairman, Barry Took.
Hello and welcome to the news quiz. We start with a cutting from The Independent.
A naked man was rescued by police after being found jumping around on cables in what he thought was an electricity substation. The police officer scaled a 10-foot barbed wire fence to reach the man before it was realised that what they thought was a power station was a BBC radio transmitter beaming out the archers.
Thanks go to Richard Crowe from Tame in Oxfordshire for sending us that. Well, now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Richard Ingrams and Ian Hislop. Facing them, on my left, Alan Corran with writer and comedian Andy Hamilton. Before we start round one, here's a cutting from Which Way to Health, sent in by Susan Hubble of Cusgarn in Cornwall.
The survey revealed that 3 DHAs were providing vasectomies only for the poor. The NHS has told DHAs that they're not allowed to means test patients, but where they make cuts is largely their own decision.
Well, that sets the tone for the programme. Richard, your question. Where is the peace dividend being heavily discounted?
Yes, indeed. This is a very good start to this round.
The peace dividend was what was meant to happen after the Cold War.
Oh, yes.
We were meant to turn our swords into ploughshares. Yes. And then cash in the difference.
I'll turn it to Alan.
We're selling all these Centurion tanks.
To film directors.
To film directors.
Yeah, Michael Winner with a Chieftain tank is not a pretty thought. 500 quid you can get an old Chieftain tank for. If we had a whip round now, we could buy a Chieftain tank and we could storm number 10 Downing Street. We could be in power by the morning. Easy. 500 quid.
With a Centurion tank, you probably wouldn't get to Piccadilly Circus by the morning. That's why they're selling them. It's all about the Ministry of Defence, who are holding a grand military boot sale of redundant equipment. Fighters, bombers and submarines are being snapped up by foreign governments who send their arms dealers with a transit van to a car park round the back of Whitehall every Sunday morning. The MOD sales assistant got suspicious when a Middle Eastern gentleman browsing around the cannon counter asked, "Do you do these in extra large?" That's that one. Ian, your question now. Who's undoing the green belt to reveal the mystery of the East?
Bill Deege would know about this because it's to do with the expansion of Docklands, isn't it?
That's right.
As part of this wonderful new environment that's going to be created.
Mm.
Beautiful new office blocks towering up into the sky.
A super city, 180,000 jobs, pigs flying everywhere.
That's
No, it's terrifically exciting. I knew all about it.
Well, it's a horrible vista, isn't it? Well, you'll be able to get on the tunnel and get on this train and come to this place. It'll be horrible.
We're full of empty tie racks. Yeah.
That's exactly it. That's what it'd be like.
It's all about Environment Secretary Michael Howard and his plans for the East Thames Corridor. Just come out of the East Thames lifts, go through the East Thames swing doors, and it's there on the left. It's actually 10,000 acres of derelict wasteland that's going to be transformed into a massive new complex overrunning the entire area. Andy, your question now. Who's making signs really is the limit?
Oh, I think I might know this. Is this to do with they've been putting these sensors in the M25 to slow everybody down?
They're changing the speed limits.
Oh,
it's,
yes.
It's much too fast on the M25.
Yeah.
People are getting up to 3 miles an hour some morning. So they're introducing differential speed limits of half a mile an hour.
But
and
it's
a fast lane, you can do 1.5 miles an hour until you get to Heathrow, and then they shunt you into
But it's a little hedgehog by the side of the motorway that rings up and says they're going more than 50 miles an hour, isn't it? Because they all go too fast.
That's
the theory
right.
of it is they all go too fast. They all get close up together, and then they have a crash, and it's on the radio, and Fred Housegow loses his temper and everything. It's to stop these mad buggers who do 70 miles an hour in BMWs, isn't it?
Who's ever done 70 miles an hour on BMW?
Well, you know, give them their own lane. I think you put mad buggers in one lane, wall it off, and then televise it.
But these are the plans to ease the flow of traffic by imposing lower speed limits on the M25, London's first orbital car park. So now the M25 can be used to improve crime statistics as well, because no matter how slowly you're going, the police will be able to choose a speed limit just low enough to give you a ticket Alan, here's a piece of music for you.
Our house is a very, very, very fine house with two cats in the yard. Life used to be so hard. Now everything is easy 'cause of you.
And the question is, what old folks' home is now considered trustworthy?
I was just thinking, you know, the first round, traditionally, for the past 18 years, has always been about political personalities. And it must be a measure of the time that none of them is interesting enough to form the question, and they've had no personality, these inert dingbats. I think this is about, there's an old bloke who moved into his parents' house in 1923, Seven Blythe, somewhere. And had all the ducks on the wall and the uncut moquette and all that. And he died, and the National Trust has taken it over. And you can now go and live in the 19... or you can walk through the 1920s suburbs. I forgot the Worksop, is it?
Yeah.
Well, thank you. I like a woman who knows her own mind. What are you doing after the show?
What are you doing during the show? You can be on this side.
Well, this is the only show on radio where the audience is brighter than the contestants.
This is quite untrue. It was very nice. I'd seen it all in Country Life. It was very nice. This story about the house, there's beautiful colour pictures and everything. Very nice. I advise you all to get it. It's an awfully good magazine, Country Life.
Yeah, I'll put
not as good as some other magazines. But...
Well, which ones are those?
It's actually got Zambuck tins. I saw this. It's wonderful. It's got things like Ronok and Oxidol and all those names on a Colster brand radio. And it's marvellous.
Absolutely right, Alan. This refers to the semi-detached house opened by the National Trust, which is a monument to the 30s, complete with the original fixtures and decorations and even a calendar featuring Strand Magazine Play Deb of the Month, Miss Barbara Cartland. Number 7, Blythe Grove Worksop, has remained untouched since 1932. But then it took the National Trust 3 weeks to tunnel their way in through 58 years worth of Reader's Digest competition leaflets. And the scores at the end of the first round are Richard and Ian 2, but Andy and Alan 4.
Can I just say it's traditional to give us full points on the first round, even when we get it wrong?
Yes, but not this week. We start round two with an item from the Daily Telegraph.
A 79-year-old widow hoarded items worth £60,000 during a 17-year shoplifting spree. It took 7 police officers more than 12 hours to load the haul into 6 vans, and 12 special constables were drafted in to draw up an inventory. PC David Clark said she's been cautioned, but none of the stores wants to press charges. In fact, many of them have gone out of business.
Thank you, Richard Armstead of Bognor Regis, for sending us that cutting. And, Richard, we're back to you now. Why has the Duchess of Duke Street now moved to Carey Street?
The Duchess of Duke Street is presumably Dame Fergana of York. What is her proper title these days, I think?
You. No, I believe she is still Her Royal Highness, the Duchess Fergana.
Her Royal Highness. Yes.
Or was that major wrong?
Oh, hello. Well, I think this refers to the fact that she's so strapped for cash that she's trying to flog photos of herself to Harper's Queen, the magazine. The elderly would buy them for a reasonable sum of about 50p if she would.
She's been trying to improve her image, amazingly, by hiring a Texan who rings people up and says, she's not some little tart, you know. And then they print that and everyone thinks, I wonder if she is. I have no view myself. I just say, as a PR exercise, it's not very effective, really. Anyway, right, enough of that.
Yes, right, get on with it.
Quite. Get on with it, Susan. It is Fergie, who is so poor she hasn't got 2 financial advisors to rub together. Despite a divorce settlement of £500,000, the grand old Duchess of York, who had 10,000 free air miles, claims she can't make ends meet. Isn't that what got her into trouble in the first place? The Duchess is said to be considering a career in advertising.
Oh, my God.
Has already been offered a part in a commercial for a new shampoo called Wash and Go Skiing. Ian, your question. Who lost direction despite having done well at the polls?
Who lost direction?
Close personal friend of Richard's.
Despite having... Is this Sir Ranulph?
It is.
Like everyone else nowadays, he treks around the country having to appear on Radio Cleethorpes and everything to try to earn an honest penny. And he couldn't find his way there. And he was mocked for this.
Well, he gave up before he got to the studio, did he?
He did, yes. That was very funny. I think they didn't appreciate that joke.
No.
But I did.
Good.
What do you think with Richard? Nothing has been changed since 1932.
Indeed.
This is the intrepid explorer Sir Ranulph Fiennes, who managed to walk to the South Pole but couldn't find the fabled lost city of Cleethorpes. I'm going out to Cleethorpes, chaps. I may be some time. Sir Ranulph had been invited to make a lunchtime speech in the East Coast town, but having set off on his expedition via Blackpool, and it can't be easy boarding an intercity 125 with a pair of tennis rackets strapped to your feet, he arrived in time for the pudding, only to find that a Norwegian had got to it first. Andy, here's some music for you.
We're only making plans for Nigel. Nigel just needs this helping hand. And if young Nigel says he's happy, he must be happy, he must be happy, he must be happy in his world.
Well, that was incredibly making plans for Nigel. And your question, Andy, is which apparently winning gambit was off the mark?
It's about the chess.
It is about the chess.
They broke away from FIDE, which is the chess federation. Yes. And it's Nigel, what's his name? Short, is it?
Short.
And this unpleasant Russian.
Yes, Kasparov.
Kasparov.
Yes.
And they put it out to tender, and there were massive bids from Murdoch newspapers and people like that. And one practical joker who momentarily caused a great flush of excitement by offering something like 10,000 billion marks and then revealed that they were First World War Deutschmarks or something.
That's right.
Is it happening in Manchester now? I think...
I really don't know.
Oh, I think it might be happening in the Barbican, which would be hours of fun, won't
Good
it?
For Sir Ranulph.
That's right. No, I think the favourite is the Barbican. Obviously, they don't know about the Barbican.
Tell us about the Barbican, George.
Kasparov going there with his ball of wool so he can get out at the end. But
this was the World Chess Championship auction held by Grandmasters Short and Kasparov. The winning bid was thought to equate to about £4 million, and it was discovered that this hoax offer was in old Reichmarks, now worth about 0.0003 of a modern Deutschmark, or roughly £4 million. Alan, where will the French take the English for a ride?
I like this a lot. This is about the Tour de France, which is going to go through Kent for a day. But in order to get to Kent, it's got to go through the Channel Tunnel. The likelihood of these people ever getting to France, because the Channel Tunnel's not going to be open, but they're then going to cycle round Kent, or such of Kent as is left after the Minister of the Environment has finished digging it up for the Channel Tunnel. And then they're all going to go back into the tunnel and come out again in France for the rest of the Tour de France, with the onions round their necks.
This is the Tour de France, you're absolutely right. The Tour de France, a section of which will be held in southeast England, just as soon as organisers devise a route which ploughs through Labour-held allotments and totally avoids key Tory marginal rhubarb patches. 198 cyclists will arrive via the hugely delayed Channel Tunnel, which should mean a much-needed boost to Dover's recession-hit puncture repair kit industry. And the scores at the end of the second round, mercifully, are Richard and Ian 6, but Alan and Andy still in the lead with 8. And we start round 3 with an item from the Halifax Evening Courier.
Birthday greetings were sung for Mrs. Henna Aykroyd at St. Thomas More Thursday Club. Tea and cakes were served by the committee, and prayers were said for all members who were ill.
Well, thank you, Ian Button of Ludnam Halifax, for sending us that. Richard, who wasn't sung a song of praise after being overcome by holy spirits?
It's a bishop, is it?
No.
The naughty bishop? I thought they'd suffered enough.
Alan, tell us.
Well, there was a vicarine, or a sort of vicarine in waiting. She was driving down the A33 and was stopped by the police. And she got out, and when they pushed her a bit, she sloshed. I mean, they could hear this slapping around between her ears. And she had something like 38 times the legal limit.
It is about Sarah Jones, one of Britain's first women trainee vicars, or Carey's Angels, who had her dog collar felt after police found her to be four times over the drink drive limit and as pious as a newt. And now, here's your piece of music, Ian. Was calling occupants of interplanetary craft. The question is, can you tell us who hammed it up and got an extra terrestrial shock from the blue?
Oh, this is Dutch pornography.
No, desperate.
No, it is. You said it was blue coming from outer space.
Yes, but that's
quite
the
obviously
answer
this so-called
Andy
red
knows
hot
the
Dutch
answer. Andy, let us.
We should pay tribute here because this was damn clever police work. What they did was up north somewhere.
Cheshire.
Whatever. They got the hump, the police, because people were listening in to police messages. So they broadcast a message like, we have detected an alien spacecraft in Farmer Potter's field. All units assist. This is top secret, or something like that. And all the people who were listening in went bombing along and got arrested. So it's tricky. It's not the kind of lateral thinking you associate with a Majesty's Constabulary, is it?
Yes, the Cheshire police officers, who, fed up with people listening to their messages broadcast at a flying saucer, had crash-landed in a field, adding the warning, "Do not approach, it may be radioactive. It's life, Sergeant, but not as we know it." The warning was followed by directions to the field. The eavesdroppers arrived within minutes, expecting to find strange little blue men with pointed heads. They did and were promptly arrested. Andy, having done brilliantly with that, here's this. What woolly idea kept longer on ice?
They discovered some tiny mammoths.
That's right.
How would you know it was a mammoth if it was tiny?
Shaped like a mammoth.
Could have been a large rat.
Big ferret. A big ferret with tusks, then. And they were... And these mammoths, they were alive a lot later than the big mammoths.
What were they doing on ice? The Bolero?
I don't know, yeah. They were at the Torville and Dean of the early sort of Protozoic period. And,
I'm surprised I missed this one.
Yeah. No, Mammoths Weekly, you should get it. It was very bold. And this is very exciting, apparently, if you're interested in mammoths. If you're that way inclined.
Micro-mammoths.
There were some lovely drawings in the Independent. You probably wouldn't have seen it. It was on the inside.
Nothing
but,
in the
some really nice shaggy mammoths. And they were 6 feet high, which is small for a mammoth, apparently. Yeah. But size isn't important.
What's the Independent? Is that a newspaper?
Thank you, Andy. You've cheered me up no end. This is a discovery that woolly mammoths survived 8,000 years longer than previously thought on a Siberian island where early cave writing has been deciphered as, "That's the wonder of woolies." Oh, dear. Alan, why are wooden tops learning to stay that way?
Yeah, oh, this is not the one about woodwork in British school. That's a nightmare. Do you know, every week in the news, because we have something about the deterioration of education, no one could have been thought, at least there were some people out there who could make toast racks. And apparently there aren't. They can't even learn woodwork properly. And they can't make a cat peg. You remember a cat peg? They can't do that. And everybody else can. And the Germans and the French and all the rest of them can do table lamps and all those things we used to have to do. That's when they complain and hit nails in straight. And the British can't.
And the problem is...
Even the children who have no academic qualifications at all haven't got any non-academic qualifications.
Well, they're jolly good at GBH and such things.
They're really trying to get a screwdriver out of a drawer. Can't work out the principle of the drawer. No one can teach them.
But that's because they learn the theory of woodwork. This is one of the few stories I have read. It was fascinating because it being a practical subject, obviously you have to approach it in an academic way. So they write essays about what they would do were they to make a table lamp. And they discuss the theory of table lamps and they do child-centred table lamp projects. And then they assess each other and the teachers come and assess them. And
metal would work.
Then obviously they don't make any table lamps.
Yeah.
Because that would be stupid.
Yeah, you couldn't...
And then they give each other certificates in the theory of table lampery. Grade A, usually.
This is yet another report about our educational standards, this one showing that basic skills, like woodwork, have become too intellectually taxing for those pupils most likely to benefit from them, the kind of kids who think log tables are rustic patio furniture and don't seem to understand the role of postmodernism in making a teapot stand. Just to show where education is going now, and the scores at the end of the third round are Richard and Ian 7, but Andy and Alan still in the lead with 13. Richard, listen to this.
I love coffee, I love tea. I love the Java Jive and it loves me. Coffee and tea and the Java and me. A cup, a cup, a cup, a cup, a cup.
Well, listeners may sometimes have wondered why I'm so incredibly alert and sparky on the news. And the answer's now been provided by science. In the shape of coffee, because it's been shown that if you drink several cups of coffee, as I do, before coming on the news quiz, your memory...
You're more likely to go to the toilet.
Well, that may very well be, but your memory is enormously enhanced.
Is that right?
That's true.
What's your name?
I think it's Bill Deed, isn't it?
Would that it were...
Well, if this theory's true, why can't the gold blend couple remember when each other are going to New York and whether they've got a brother or not?
Yeah. It's the study that claims coffee drinkers have better memories and think quicker, which explains why Gareth Hunt was dropped from that coffee advertisement campaign. Scientists at the Institute of Psychiatry and Elevenses found people who drink more than 6 cups a day had faster reaction times than non-coffee drinkers. The results were welcomed by the Coffee Science Information Service, which also added, coffee drinkers tend to be better looking, have whiter teeth, and are all Nobel Prize winners. Ian, your question now. What will play while the cat's away, but only if you've fitted the batteries? It's a real whizzer of a question, this.
Oh, this is, a new product, which is electric mice, which you leave in your home so that burglars, when they come in, they see these electric mice and they're running all over your property and they think, oh, no, good grief, mice are scary. I don't want to go in there. So the burglars run an absolute mile. They're a brilliant invention. Well, that's totally made up. If that's true, that's the most pathetic thing I've ever not read.
Well, you'll be amazed when you hear the answer, then. It's all about a tiny robot called a mouse, a sort of mini-mouse, but with smaller ears and without the squeaky voice. The mice might even go inside human brains, although scientists are worried in case one went in and got lost. The patient would then have to go around for months with a tiny trap and a lump of cheese stuffed in his ear. Andy, your question now. Whose head will roll after the axe falls? Tower of London, ring of bells.
Oh, yes. Oh. They're replacing the beef eaters with security guards.
Good heavens, are they really?
Yes, because they've all got mad cow disease from eating beef or something, I don't know. So instead of the beef eaters in their lovely festive garb, we're going to have
robot
ex-policemen.
Robot mice.
Yes, very small.
Well, they're going to be the sort of pizza eaters. Slobbish guys in uniform, so.
Yeah.
It's to do with the end
of
the
all right, Reg, I'll look round about there. Got any fags?
Yeah.
Very smart security men, don't you think?
Yeah, the tourists will love that. I mean, the sort of, you know, I don't care who you are, you're not coming in. The tourists will...
It's
suggested first of the Beefeater reshuffle, which will mean staff cuts at the Tower of London. For centuries, the yeoman warders have guarded the famous landmark, repelling bands of marauding invaders, mostly by charging them £7 admission. Many of the Beefeaters are worried that they're going to get the sack from the bloody Tower, and they're a bit worried that they might not last the Bleeding Gate either. Alan, who's helping their clients to come out of their shells?
It's about tortoises.
Tortoises?
Yes. Well, it would be. It's not much else comes out of a shell. It's a prawn. You wouldn't want to help that. Yes, this is one about tortoises, Barry. I'm glad you spotted that.
They can't find partners for tortoises because of the import ban. So, so they've got an agency now and they pair up the tortoises.
They don't need partners. I mean, you give them anything. You have a policeman's helmet. Or... I don't see why it needs another tortoise.
No.
I mean, it can't be particularly interesting.
But they're not going to get respect from a policeman's helmet, are they?
You mean it won't be there for them?
That's right.
This refers to Britain's first computer dating agency for tortoises. You have to send a photo and a brief CV. For instance, fun-loving 130-something seeks petite reptile to share interest in lettuce. Before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the team have brought along. Richard?
Well, this has been sent in by someone in the National Union of Mine Workers, which is very nice. It's from the Doncaster Star, and it says, dramatic pictures of the harrowing aftermath of pit disasters and of royal visits are part of a historic collection being compiled by a Barnsley man.
Ian, what have you brought for us?
This is from the West Australian. It's a broadcasting cutting. It says, Sky Television made tremendous progress during the year just ended and was being received in a total of 1.6 houses in Great Britain. Making its target of 3 million houses very realistic.
Thank you. Andy?
Well, mine's from The Star. Shoplifter Winston Austin made a big mistake when he stuffed a live lobster in his trousers. The shell-shocked shellfish clamped its claws hard on his privates as he ran from the supermarket. Police in Boston, Massachusetts said, when we caught up with him, he was trying to prize the pincers off. The store is not pressing charges.
Well, we're drawing towards the end of Be Kind to Animal Week. Alan, what have you brought for us?
Crying out.
I've got a cultural vignette from the Loughborough Echo. It says, tomorrow's Loughborough Jazz Club lecture, the harmonica, an underrated instrument, has been called off because only three people applied for tickets.
Let me thank you all. Let's have a look at the final scores. Well, they are Richard and Ian. How you achieved it, I do not know, but you've got 11. But... Andy and Alan have scored a magnificent 17 and are, of course, this week's winners. Well done. Before we leave you, here's a cutting from the planning's application column of the Windsor Express, sent to us by Bernard Kaplan of Glasgow.
St. Stephen First School, demolition of two huts and construction of a children's play area for the school's governors.
With that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Richard Ingrams, Alan Corran, Ian Hislop and Andy Hamilton. The chairman was Barry Took and the news was read by me, Katrina Young. The programme was written by Ian Pattinson and Robert Fraser-Steele. The producer was Louise Coates.